Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
June 5th, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, an interview with Dave Story and Kevin Connor. I had a great opportunity to go down to San Jose and talk with two very knowledgeable gentlemen who work in the digital imaging group there at Adobe. Dave is a vice president and Kevin is a senior director, and they really know Photoshop, Adobe Camera Raw, even the Lightroom project inside and out. So this was a great opportunity for me to pick their brains a little bit and then to bring this information back to you. So we had so much good stuff. The conversation went so well. I had both Dave and Kevin sitting there at the table, and we just started rolling, that I decided to break the interview up into two parts. Now, I'm going to run the first part this week. And this week we talk about Photoshop CS Standard and Extended, and not only the differences between those two releases and some of the goodies that you find in Extended, but a lot about the development of Photoshop CS3 itself, because there's all sorts of interesting things that happened at the beginning of that development cycle, things such as Windows Vista, Macs switching to Intel. Really, these guys had to deal with a lot of stuff, and it's very interesting to hear from the inside how they pulled it off. So we're going to have that part of the interview today. We're going to really talk about the development of Photoshop CS3, a little bit about Extended Edition, and give you a good feeling for this overall project. So that's this week, Standard Edition and Extended Edition of Photoshop CS3 and its development. And then next week, we're going to get into Forensic, we're going to get into Lightroom, we're going to get into Adobe Camera Raw with the same two guys. I got lots of great stuff, so you got to make sure you come back for part two next week. Okay, one last thing. Before I roll Kevin and Dave, I have a little virtual camera club business to take care of, but I want to take care of that after the interview. We're going to talk about the photo assignment. We have a new photo assignment for June, so I want to take care of all that. So right now, let's listen to Dave and Kevin, and then I'll see you in a little bit. I have both Dave Story and Kevin Connor here. Dave is the VP of Product Development for Interactive Design. That's a new title. And Kevin is Senior Director of Product Management for Professional Digital Imaging. Now, those are big titles, but really what I have here are two digital imaging geeks and guys that really love photography and love talking about photography. Now, it's Dave's story. We're going to have to say right up front, no relation here, right?
We're not related. We went down the family tree a little bit, and it thinned out pretty quick on my side, so.
And then Kevin Connor, who's Senior Director of Product Management. Kevin, we've never chatted before, have we?
No, we haven't. I think we've crossed paths in various ways. I've certainly seen, you know, stuff from you in the past. I know you've been really involved in some of the stuff we've done on Lightroom, but we've never actually met.
So it's great to have both these guys on the show. So we're going to start out today. I thought we would start out talking about, let's start with CS3. And, you know, just to kind of get our feet wet here, first thing that I've noticed is that we have a couple different releases of CS3 here, and Extended in particular. So I thought, okay, I got the two guys here that probably know more about this than anyone. What should we know about Extended and how it fits into the whole picture?
I think one of the things we're always doing with Photoshop is just looking at who our users are. You know, as everybody knows, there are many different types of people who use Photoshop in many different types of ways, and that keeps growing. So photography actually wasn't even the first earliest adopters of Photoshop. In a lot of ways, it was aimed at the pre-press market and printing in the beginning and designers, and various people have found ways to use Photoshop, and we keep adding features to better address those needs. I think that the cool thing about Photoshop is it's a very adaptable tool. People figure out that we have all these lead users who figure out new ways to use it before we do even. And then what we do is we look at what they're doing and say, okay, how can we make that easier? How can we make that more effective for them? And what we started to see with Photoshop is we were starting to get more as digital imaging became much more pervasive, we were starting to find more people using Photoshop in these ways that were even further afield. People using it in scientific and medical imaging and forensics analysis and a lot of the architectural engineering applications where they were doing things that were, you know, in some cases, it was a less of an aesthetic goal behind using the application and more geared towards analyzing the content of images or just visualizing something so that people can understand the concept better. And we actually looked at, you know, what features should we be doing for those people. And we found that, you know, we didn't want to sort of distract the core of Photoshop. You know, there's a stuff that Photoshop has stood for years, and we didn't want to have people start feeling like, oh, Photoshop getting too bloated, doing too many things. And we thought, well, let's segment this off a little bit and let's start adding features that really push on these new areas where people are using Photoshop. But at the same time, what we did find is there was some commonality across all these different groups in the features that they needed. And there was also, even among some of our core customers, probably less so photographers than designers, but even to some extent for some photographers, there was some appeal in some of these additional features we were adding. So we thought, you know, rather than doing a completely separate product, let's make this other thing be a superset so that those people who want those extra features can get them, but those people who don't want to be distracted by that stuff or really focused on what they need, they can continue to use the same Photoshop they've been using for years, but, you know, with, you know, more features continuing down the path that we've already been down. And, you know, one of the things we've already seen is already, even though we thought at the outset that probably not that many photographers would be interested in the extended version, we found that things like the stacks feature, some photographers discovered interesting applications of stacks for, you know, removing things from scenes. If you take like multiple pictures of, you know, some public scene and you stack those images together and do what's called, you know, a median on that stack of images, the people disappear from the scene. So, you know, again, that's in itself may not be reason for most photographers to go out and buy extended. But again, it starts pointing the way. Lead users start showing us applications of these things where in the future we might say, hey, maybe in CS4 we should take some of that stack stuff, put a different kind of interface more focused on photography, and put it in the core Photoshop as well.
So if I'm a photographer, let's say an advanced amateur photographer, I shoot RAW, I have a digital SLR, I use Photoshop to some degree in post-production, maybe I'm using some Lightroom also, things like that. What would be in extended that I should be thinking about when I'm making that decision, that upgrade? Or is it pretty much a standard release, you know, kind of thing for me?
You know, one of the things that Kevin alluded to is what people do with extended is they're trying to extend their creative capability. And the picture that he referred to, you know, you go to Paris and you try and take a picture of the Eiffel Tower with no people in it, right? Well, it's impossible. And that's what a lot of people want to capture. They want to capture the impossible image, the image that's going to get a wow. Like, how'd you do that? And that's why they're spending time in post-production with Photoshop. But what a lot of people want to do is they want to have the most reflective of the real scene. They want to capture the memory. They don't want to create something totally artificial. They want to create the impossible photograph that really captures the memory of that scene. And so when Kevin was talking about stacks, as soon as we saw people doing that, we said, oh, that makes perfect sense. You know, if you take 50 pictures of this of the Eiffel Tower with people walking back and forth and just average it out, you'll realize that the people are moving. The Eiffel Tower is not, unless there's a hell of a breeze going on. And so you actually get rid of the people. And as a side effect, it also tends to reduce the noise of the picture, which extends the capability of your camera to capture maybe that low-light scene of the Eiffel Tower.
Because noise is random, right? So if you have multiple shots of the same thing, and because noise is random and you find some way to map them to each other, then noise essentially begins to cancel itself out, right?
Yeah, what you do is, you know, if you've got a bunch of different frames, it will actually start to average out. But if your camera's not moving, or even if you use the alignment features to reduce or to align the photos, which are just amazingly cool in CS3, then you'll actually do that without reducing sharpness.
So this, we're talking about the stacks feature right now, and this is a feature that you find in extended only. What else is in extended that would be interesting to a serious amateur photographer that's really, you know, into maybe doing a little bit of post-production and as you say, Dave, extending their creativity?
The other thing that's there, you know, there's a big area in Photoshop Extended is a lot more support for 3D. Now, you know, someone who is a photographer who is just taking shots that they just want to optimize the appearance of those and, you know, maintain just what was in the scene, they're probably not going to have use for 3D. But if you're a photographer that's doing any amount of creative compositing, then it can be really interesting to start incorporating some 3D content into those composites. You can actually – this is – Photoshop is not intended to be a full 3D modeling tool, but you can take 3D content that's been created elsewhere. You can even download free 3D content from, you know, Google has a 3D warehouse, for example. So you can download that and then bring it into Photoshop, rotate it to any angle you want, even modify the lighting a bit, modify the textures in Photoshop just by painting on them, and so you can incorporate that very cleanly into the scene. In general, I mean, if you look at the areas where Photoshop extends itself, it's basically three key areas. One is the image analysis side, where there's a variety of tools for analyzing the content of images more. And Stacks is actually one of the features in that area. I mean, the applications we've been talking about where you stack images and get rid of noise or get rid of people, in a way is sort of a byproduct of what was the primary goal of that. And that was dealing with things like medical images, where there would be like multiple slices of an organism taken at different levels, and those shots needed to be combined in some way. And it's just photographers started finding interesting applications of that. But then, in addition to analysis, the other areas where we've sort of expanded things is by better integration of workflows for 3D content and then also for video and motion graphics. So those are sort of the key areas. If you want to get a good sense, it's analysis, 3D, and video.
Now, the standard release of Photoshop is pretty darn interesting, too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's happened here. One of the things that I've become a huge fan of is both Camera Raw, the latest version of it, and then Bridge it. But within Photoshop itself, I mean, the photo merge capability, the redesign of the UI or the enhancement of the UI, there's some very, very nice stuff in there. How did you guys pull all of this off? And yet the application right now on my Mac, on my Intel Mac, is running faster than CS3. Tell me a little bit about what's going on in your guys' approach to all of that.
Yeah, we took a pretty radically different approach, and one of the things that came out of it was actually the public beta. If you rewind just a little bit, at the beginning of the CS3 cycle, we were not expecting to have a perfect storm confronting us. So as a company, not only was Vista coming, not only did Apple surprise the world with, you know, the Intel transition and entirely new compilers and tools that we needed to adopt, not only was all that going on, but then we acquired Macromedia and had to change our product plans to really collaborate with people that we'd been competing with before. And, you know, I think you can see now that we had incredible success in pulling that all off on the Macromedia side, because the cultures really fit well together and the teams really like each other. And I mean, when we announced the acquisition, there were people on the Macromedia side who had printed T-shirts for their little kids saying, you know, we're happy to be part of Adobe. I mean, there was a really good initial reaction. And then we followed through with the cultures really fitting and people wanting to work together, and the workflows made sense. And so it's a whole bunch of really juicy goodness.
Well, one of my favorite parts about the merger with Macromedia, or the acquisition, is you got this really cool building down on Townsend Street, too, that I really like. So, I mean, you know, I love that building, and I have some meetings down there. So there was a lot of good things that came out of that aspect of the perfect storm.
Yeah, I've really, really enjoyed working with the Macromedia teams. And you know, we mix the teams up as well. So I work with the Dreamweaver and the Fireworks teams as well. Yeah, I think that the other thing, just with all that perfect storm going on, what's also going on out in the industry was people were saying, hey, isn't it assumed that if you add more functionality, your application gets slower? And we've seen in certain products from other companies that, you know, as they add stuff, help systems that involve paper clips, for instance, you know, you roll your eyes like you just did, going, what is this for?
He was correct. I actually did roll my eyes when he said the paperclip thing.
And so what we struggle with and do our darndest on is, how can we make our product more useful, more creative, more able to support your desires in creating things, and yet every release trying to figure out how to make it leaner, more flexible, faster? And so for this release, one of the things that we focused on was performance as a feature. And not only did we do a lot of pre-release work and change the way we did development to get more customer feedback on things like the UI all throughout the cycle instead of having it all occur at the end in a normal development cycle, but we intentionally focus some folks on let's make the application launch faster. Even as we integrate with more of these products and do more things and add 3D, the application launches a lot faster. And we've done a bunch of tuning throughout, but the first thing people notice is how much faster CS3 launches, whether it's an Intel Mac, a Windows machine, or a PowerPC Mac.
Top of all that, you pulled it off by having an application that has just a really a lot of good features. For instance, brightness contrast. Brightness contrast is cool. For years and years and years, we said, you can't really use brightness contrast because it'll just destruct the heck out of your image. The whole thing seems to be rewritten, and brightness contrast is actually a useful control again. And I'm finding that over and over again in this release of Photoshop.
I think that really comes from us paying attention to customers. Everybody on the development team, of course to product managers, but everybody on the development team, they have customers as buddies. And they're using the product, right? And it's one of the kinds of products where you really can become someone who's in love with it, even if you're writing code on it. You know, it's a hobby as well as a day job. And so in particular with brightness contrast, it used to be a linear operation, and now it's nonlinear, which preserves more of the local contrast and gives you a much better result for the type of work you're doing.
I think, in some ways, brightness and contrast, maybe that the fact that we changed that, you might be able to look at that as a hint of things to come, in that we looked at that for years. We've been telling people, don't use brightness and contrast because it'll ruin your image. And yet people go to brightness and contrast because they can immediately understand it. It's like adjusting your TV set, right? And, at a certain point, you're like, well, why should we be telling people to go use something else? If they want to use this thing, let's make that thing work better. And I think in general, we're just starting to turn the ship that way. But to a certain extent, we really want to do more and more of saying, hey, let's take a look at a lot of things we're already doing and make those things a lot better and a lot easier to access, more effective to use. And really, that's really the path to making sure that over time, we don't wind up with some big bloated application.
And I think from the photographer point of view, brightness and contrast are terms that I recognize as a photographer. Maybe screen and multiply are terms that I'm not so familiar with as a photographer. So it's really nice, and where I'm really seeing this show up now is in Adobe Camera Raw. I open up Adobe Camera Raw right now, and I can pretty much guess correctly what every one of those sliders is going to do, and I can guess pretty easily how it's going to turn out when I use it. This is a big deal for me, and probably for a lot of other people too, who are used to the photographer's language and are seeing more of the photographer's language show up in the Photoshop tools.
I mentioned how flexible Photoshop is. One of the reasons is because a lot of things are done as just sort of these, they're just raw tools. They're not designed for a specific task. So they're very tied to sort of the engineering behind it. And people can apply that stuff in whatever way they want. And they always find interesting ways to apply it. And that makes Photoshop sort of endlessly sort of reconfigurable and applicable to different things. But in the path of making things easier to use and more accessible, you also have to take some of that technology and put a different face on it, make it a little bit more specific to tasks, and put terminology in things that people can immediately relate to. And to some extent, we've got to strike the balance, because it's really good to have parts of the application that are very flexible that people can find out new ways to use things, like stacks, for example. There's nothing in there that is specific to photography, but a certain set of photographers figure out interesting things to do with that. And then over time, we can say, how can we take some of that technology and turn it into a photography-specific feature?
Oh, I really enjoy talking with those guys. They're terrific, and I have some good stuff for next week, too, so make sure you come back and listen to that. Now, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. First thing on the agenda is we have a new photo assignment for this month, for June, and we've had lots of discussion on our Flickr, our public group page, about what we should do, and what I want to do is something with photo manipulation, and this seems appropriate. We're talking about Photoshop today. We'll be talking about Photoshop next week, so we got kind of a theme thing going here. So the theme for the photo assignment for June is before and after. Before and after. So you're actually going to be submitting two shots for your assignment. You're going to submit, the first shot is going to be your original capture of an image, what came right out of the camera. Of course, you have to resize it for me so that's only 600 pixels in the longest direction. But other than that, no image editing at all, just a resize. And then the after is going to be that very same image, that original image, only after you've done your photo manipulation to it. And this can be anything. This can be cropping and exposure and whatever you want, using whatever editor that you want. It can be Photoshop, it can be Lightroom, it can be Aperture, it can be iPhoto, it can be GIMP, whatever you use. Then give me the after shot. So we're going to run these side by side. So each person's actually going to have two images for their photo assignment. The first thing on capture, and then what they did with it afterwards. And it can be about any subject that you want. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it. And I know I'm really going to enjoy looking at this gallery, because I think it's just going to be terrific. So before and after, that is the photo assignment for June. Now I want to talk a little bit about our Flickr page. It's really going well. And, we have this new thing now where you can, add the critique tag to an image that you want to have a more in-depth discussion about it. And so first, you've got to become a member of the Flickr group. And, I've detailed that, and there's instructions. If you lost your way or haven't been tuning in lately, all you have to do is go to the member photo gallery on the Digital Story, and it will show you some of the latest photos that have been submitted. And it also has links to all the instructions and the links to our Flickr public group page too. So you can find everything you need on the Digital Story at the member photo gallery. Those of you that are participating and you'd like to have a little bit more discussion about your shot, make sure you add the critique tag. And also feel free to participate in the discussions that we have going on there and, start a new topic if you want. And if you just want to share photos but you don't really want to critique, that's really great too. And you can just leave that critique tag off. So the main thing is, this is another way for you to participate in our virtual camera club. And, I'm going to be talking a little bit more about, this concept of virtual camera club. I actually want to dedicate a whole show to it. And I'm going to try to do that a little bit later on in June, because I've been getting some questions about it. And so we'll talk about it in depth. So that's coming up. So stay tuned for that. And then last thing, grab shots, just keep sending them in, and I'm going to keep running them. I'm really enjoying them. The quality of them has been fabulous, and I thoroughly enjoy our grab shots. So I want to thank our sponsors, Expo Imaging, the makers of ExpoDisc, and also Photomagico, made by Boink Software, the greatest slideshow software in the world. And we have links to both of those on the Digital Story. You have little tiles over on the right-hand side. Make sure you go over and give our sponsors a look. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Next week, we'll do part two with Dave and Kevin. Lots of good stuff, a little CSI action even. So make sure you tune in, and I will see you here next week.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.